Blog Talk Radio.
Today on Backroom Politics, live from Shelley's Back Room, the American credit rating seems to be in jeopardy. Is Donald Trump for real? And can we survive a Trump White House? And other things, political, inside, outside the Beltway. This is Tuesday, 4 p.m. on the East Coast. It's time for Blog Talk Radio's Backroom Politics. Washington, D.C. That means it's time for Backroom Politics Live from Shelley's Back Room, 1331 F Street in the heart of our nation's capital. I'm your moderator, Justin Russell, and as always, as we do every Tuesday from 4 to 6, we have our usual roundtable of political pundits, political insiders to talk about everything that's happening inside the Beltway, outside the Beltway, and in your community. To my left, as he is always, he is a former 8-term member of Congress from Washington 2nd District. He's a former Vice President of Government Affairs for Burlington Northern Railroad. He is the Honorable Congressman Al Swift. Al, welcome back.
It's good to be back every Tuesday.
And sitting directly in front of me, as he is always, is the former floor chief for Gerald Ford. He is the former Vice President of Government Affairs for the National Broadcasting Corporation and former board member of the National Association of Broadcasters. He is the Honorable Bob Hines. Bob, welcome back.
Glad to be here. Wouldn't be any place else.
There we go. And to my right, as he is always, he is bar-certified attorney in New York and Washington, D.C. He's the vice president of the Eurasia Center and our global geopolitical pundit. He is Dr. Ralph Winnie. Dr. Ralph, welcome back.
Glad to be here. And Justin, I have to say happy Fuhao Jie to you.
And back at you two and your family. Okay, there is a lot of stuff going on inside the Beltway. We are not messing around today. I got to tell you something. The past 24 hours has been almost a financial wildfire here in Washington, D.C. Obviously, the news broke yesterday early that Standard & Poor's has put out a warning that the United States government and its credit rating could lose its AAA rating and be downgraded. The first time ever that that's happened, and that is going to be a big topic of discussion here inside Washington politics and the political scene. But before we get started, I want to let everybody out there who's listening, you can call in. Our number is 619-638-8477. Again, our number is 619-638-8477. Call in, ask any questions. Every topic political is on the table for our roundtable discussion. But we're going to start off today again with this Standard & Poor's rating scare. This has gotten the attention of a lot of senior administration officials. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner is obviously watching this very closely. Bob, how real is this?
Jason, I think that the warning is a real one in the sense that Moody's is, Standard & Poor's is saying that if we don't get our act together fairly quickly, they're saying if you wait until the very end, you're gonna cause yourself a big problem, even if you do succeed, because people will have been scared to death and already been starting to pull back. But I think that if we didn't solve our problem, what Moody's is, Standard & Poor's is saying is exactly right. We would lose our AAA bond rating, and the interest that we have to pay now on our debt would be higher going forward, and that would be a terrible problem. We would also lose a great deal of credibility in the international financial world.
Ralph, bringing the international financial implications, what are the international financial implications of us losing our AAA standards, our AAA rating with Standards & Poor's?
Very dire. You already have China and Russia that no longer use the dollar as their reserve currency. And unfortunately, it just sends the message to other countries to dump the dollar and look at an oil-based currency as your reserve method.
An oil-based currency?
Yeah.
Define that a little bit for those inside and outside the Beltway who may not be familiar.
Similar to what OPEC has been trying to do and connected with the Canadian dollar, which is very, very strong at this point.
So when we talk about going to an oil-based global funding
commodity, yeah.
Basically, instead of using the dollar as your normal mode of trade, we would use futures in oil as the global economy grows or shrinks or however, money would be paid in oil futures instead of dollars. Is that correct?
Absolutely. That's why you're seeing the Chinese really trying to diversify into commodities. They're also looking at taking interest in our national parks for the minerals and other resources.
Really? The Democrats have come out very strongly about this issue. They've thrown blame around, saying that this is a Republican problem. The Republican Party has created this. Do the Democrats, have you seen around the Beltway, have they seen any responsibility in this, or do they have an actual fix for this problem?
I think that everybody has part of the responsibility. Here's what I don't understand. First of all, why was anybody surprised? I mean, we've been talking about the dire condition of our budget and of our economy for a long, long time. Secondly, all that the public has seen are the two parties quibbling at each other. It's kind of finding, you know, your mother wears army boots and so's your old man, kind of a debate kind of thing. And I don't think that helps the public understand this is a serious matter. So until both parties, Republicans and Democrats, stop playing the blame game and start talking some sense to the American people, I don't see how you're going to get the American people to understand fully how serious this issue is.
Bob,
I think what Standard & Poor's did on yesterday is one of the best things that could happen from the standpoint of the public realizing how serious it is.
But it begs the question, does the public truly understand what effect going from AAA to maybe a AA rating is going to have on their everyday living?
The public doesn't understand any of this. I mean, you got the Tea Party running around with its oversimplified understanding. I think that the kindest word you can say is naive, understanding what the whole thing is and how easy it's going to be fixed. You just stop spending that, take care of it. And neither side, the president has not sat down and had a fireside chat, if you will, with the American public and saying, look, this is what's at stake. John Boehner has made a couple of hints at it, but neither party really has spent much time in trying to educate the public about what we're up against. And when they're going to be sorry that they didn't bring the public along when they finally have to start making those very, very tough votes, and the public saying, why are you doing that?
You know, we saw this weekend some of the talking head shows, be it Meet the Press, Face the Nation, et cetera, Fox News Sunday, where they were talking about the implications of a possible downgrade. When they talk about it, they put it into euphemisms that relate to basically, you know, we can't get a credit card. Our credit card limit goes from $1,000 to $500. Whether or not that resonates with the public is questionable, but Bob, it does beg the question, is now the time that Timothy Geithner, Secretary of Treasury, and for the most part, President Obama, do they have to come out of the gate and really start getting serious about getting the message and a solid message to the general public about, hey, everybody's going to have to tighten the belts?
I think they have to do it. President, I think Geithner is beginning to, and I think the president needs to do it. But it isn't just the Democrats here that have to do this. The Republicans are, look, a lot of the debt was created during the Republican administration. A lot of the debt. And that doesn't mean that we can just – so we can't just say, well, the Democrats are in power and we Republicans don't have to worry about it. We do have to worry about it. We're all Americans, and the debt's – if the debt – we get downgraded on our debt, everybody is going to suffer. everybody is going to suffer. So we really got to make sure, number one, that the public understands how serious this is. So it isn't just, again, the president that ought to be talking. I'd like to see congressional leaders talking about it. I would hope they would do that, because I think it's vitally important that, people understand that some very hard votes are going to have to be taken. There's going to be a lot of things are going to be done that people may not like, but they're going to have to realize that their elected officials are doing what has to be done.
Now would be a very good time, if you could get anybody up there to be serious, to hold a series of serious hearings on the state and bring in experts from all over and do an education job, which I think the members need as badly as the public.
What those hearings will point out is that the Emporium rating score is actually they've actually held back in trying to warn the American people. So it's a lot worse than people really, really expect, because they did not want anything to affect the stock market or the U.S. economy.
But
now with China, Russia, and other countries, you're not going to see them be willing to buy U.S. Treasury bonds. U.S. cannot send Geithner over to China or Hillary Clinton like they did previously to ask them to buy Treasury bonds, because they're not going to do it.
Bob?
Well, it strikes me, I saw something yesterday that kind of shook me up a little bit. The article that I read said, in effect, Standard & Poor's, having said what they might, what they are considering doing, that is downgrading our credit rating, has already had a major impact, because people who are planning maybe to, you know, buy bonds will be holding back. I mean, it's a look. They're looking at it and they're saying to themselves, if the United States can't get their act together quickly, you know, waiting to the last minute is not a good idea here, because it's going to, in the next 2 months or so, while we are trying to get our act together, if this continues without a solution that people think is coming quickly, there's going to be people already assuming that we're going to have our bond rating cut, and then they're going to take steps to protect themselves immediately, which means not buying our bonds.
Well, more and more countries are going to start lecturing the U.S. about getting their fiscal situation in order. China has already started that. You're also going to see the Japanese having to cash in their T-bonds to pay for the damage to the earthquake. That's going to make the situation even more precarious.
But Al, you know, we've been dealing with a fiscal crisis, if you will, since 2008 at the bust of the housing bill. And since then, we've gone through a presidential election. We've even gone through midterms. We're now going on 3.5 years in this financial crisis. Are we that naive as a country to believe that this is something that could have been averted early on?
I think that the members, that the politicians are that cowardly. I think they are not talking straight to the American public. I think the media, by and large, hasn't done as good a job as they could do in making it clear. Hence, the public, I think, doesn't really believe this is a problem. They've been scared before and found out that there was no boogeyman in the closet. And so they're just waiting for the politicians to stop committing with each other.
Has there been a lot of crying wolf in the financial markets?
Well, you know, this is different. Yeah, this is different than saying we don't have a budget. I mean, that's something that's more domestic, if you will. I mean, closing down the government is more us in our own little house having a problem. What we're getting now with the debt ceiling question, which the whole neighborhood is looking at, is and say that house is that they may start burning down real quick. So I think we have to be much more concerned about this than we do about a continuing resolution type problem, which we've been going through for the last 6 months. That means that one hasn't we solved ourselves. We can't solve this ourselves unless we are prepared to go at getting ourselves a debt ceiling increase as soon as possible before people start taking action to protect themselves against higher rates that we're going to have to be paying.
Now, we saw this week where it was announced that China now officially is the second largest economy globally. And the Chinese are continuing to capitalize on that. Is this situation something that could, one, leapfrog them into number one if we're not careful, or two, is this something that we're going to continue to have, they're going to continue to use their global economic muscle to push their way around how the global financial institutions are run?
Well, China, when I go to China, the number one issue is, what is the state of American business? What is the state of the American economy? Because they've been following this for years, and they cannot understand how a country can just continue to borrow money and not have any type of fiscal responsibility. So the Chinese now are looking at creating their own economic system, trying to promote themselves in the world community. And they will overtake us if we don't get our fiscal situation in order.
And this is tied up with something else. There was an article column in the Post either yesterday or today that pointed out that its point of view was, we can't do anything about Gaddafi unless the United States is involved. And that reasons that they listed was because of our prestige, because of our military power, because of our leadership ability, because we know how to do these things, on and on and on and on and on. And I thought, yeah, sure. And if our economy goes to hell, where does that put us? I think we could be on the edge of no longer being the country, no longer being the number one country. I think
really?
We could be on the edge of starting to slide. It'll probably be a long, slow slide, but I think if we're not economically viable, we can't long be militarily viable, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I mean,
it's a loss of faith is what it comes down
absolutely.
To.
Absolutely. Yeah, and well, I've heard a couple of people say that this moment could be the most dire financial crisis this country has seen its history globally. Is that accurate?
Well, it's at least the biggest problem since the Great Depression. No doubt about it. And if we don't get our act together very quickly, we are going to, I think that Ralph and Al are exactly right. We could just start being looked at as a failed country that can't govern itself.
But do we, the Great Depression arguably didn't have the global impact that something like this would, especially back in the 30s, we didn't have the global economy that we have today.
It's true.
This ramification is going to be a dire, dire impact to our country's well-being, and that even ties into, like you said, Al, our national security.
So many currencies are tied in with the dollar.
Right.
That's what makes the situation so problematic.
Exactly.
And now countries are looking at moving away from the dollar, looking at another currency. You're going to see more of that. You're going to see more countries coming out and being very aggressive towards the U.S. on issues like defense and human rights.
So now our question comes up is, the big winners here, it appears, could be Canada. Is that accurate, Brown?
Their dollar is very, very strong. Their banking system is strong.
China, obviously.
Saudi Arabia, the oil money, OPEC country.
What about the resurgence of Russia as a global economic power again?
They've got to diversify. They cannot just be a commodity-based system. If they set up Skolkovo, which is their new Silicon Valley, as a way to attract international business, I think they could regain the superpower status.
Who are the big losers in this globally, Ralph?
The U.S. and Western countries.
Great Britain, Germany, France, basically your NATO bloc.
Right.
Wow, that's pretty disheartening.
The worst thing is for us to start printing money that has no value. That's what happened in Germany under the Weimar Republic.
And that's when people start rolling wheelbarrows in to buy toilet paper. Okay, we're 20 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the Standard & Poor's credit rating downgrade and how that ties into our current financial crisis with the debt ceiling and the budget. This is Backroom Politics live from Shelley's Backroom on Blog Talk Radio. Stay with us.
da 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 down, da 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 down, down down down, wa da 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 down.
Shelley's Back Room, 1331 F Street, in the heart of our nation's capital. This is Backroom Politics live from Shelley's Back Room on Blog Talk Radio. We invite all our listeners to call in, ask any questions about the financial crisis we're dealing with, or any political questions for our roundtable. You can call in at 619-638-8477. Again, that number is 619-638-8477. Continuing our discussion from the last segment, we're talking about the current fiscal crisis and the Standard & Poor's warning of a possible downgrade of the federal government treasury bond credit rating, which is going to have a huge impact on everything that we do here in the U.S., both domestically and foreign. But with that in mind, it also ties into the crisis is actually – there's a two-pronged focus on this crisis. One is the credit rating, the international impact that our credit rating downgrade would have. But we're also looking at the internal issue of the debt ceiling, and they seem to be tied together. Is that accurate, Ralph?
Yes.
So with the tie-in together, it's almost a catch-22. If we do hit the debt ceiling and we're not able to pay the bills on time, that's going to allow Standard & Poor's justification to go ahead and move our credit rating down to what could be a double A or a single A. God forbid we got to a triple B. But if we don't address the situation with Standard & Poor's, there's no reason for us to deal with the debt ceiling. We can just take it and do what Ireland did and say, hey, so what? We're just going to take the bad credit rating. We'll just go back and focus internal. Right now, Bob, we were talking at the break about a possible deal. Does a deal have to come out quickly, and does it have to be definitive for the public to get their arms around?
Well, I think a deal has to come relatively quickly for more than just to help the public come around, but a deal has to be done quickly in order for the international financial community and Standard & Poor's to just look like, in effect, start making other plans, start deciding they have to find other systems and build another structure. I think they'd be downgrading us because they wouldn't want to wait till the last minute. They want to know we're going to do our job. So I think our solution is I hope soon, and I hope it has to be done soon. And I think it, and as I think we talked during the break, that there is reason to believe that the outlines of the deal are possibly being circulated among the leadership now.
Well, we go ahead.
This is a very critical time. Other countries are going to obviously watch and see how we react to the Standard & Poor's rating. Are we going to finally get our act in order, or are we going to take Ireland's approach and just say, screw you, we'll just take this rating and try and resolve things internally, which leads us down to a path of destruction?
Well, in talking about a possible deal, Secretary Geithner was on CNBC this morning, and according to a report from Politico, he is optimistic about a deal being done on the debt. That being said, he outlined a four-point deal that might be on the table, which includes the first point, lock in multi-year targets that puts the deficit on a path of decline over time. Now, Al, you being a former member of Congress, everybody's representing the interests of their district. You've got plus-ups, you've got amendments, you've got earmarks. Is that realistic as a former member of Congress? Is that a realistic target? Could you, as a member of Congress, live with that, knowing that it's going to have an impact on your district?
Well, it's awfully hard to talk about what you would have done when you don't have to do it.
Right.
But I did take some very tough votes vis-a-vis what my district wanted.
Right.
And I would hope that were I there, the answer would be yes. And the way I would explain it to my people is we have got to do our part on this. Then what happens is if the state next door doesn't do that, then they come back and say, you're feeding the money to Oregon or whatever. But it seems to me this is where we need some guts in the Congress, Senate, and House.
And some presidential leadership.
And some presidential leadership. One, explain that this is crucial and why it's crucial and what will happen if we don't deal with it. And then work out as fair a distribution of the pain as possible. And from my standpoint, that has to include some revenue increases.
Al, I think you're right. I think if the American people really understand how dire the situation is, they're going to be willing to make painful sacrifices that are going to be necessary to bring the fiscal situation in order.
But nobody up there is preparing them for that.
Right. Nobody's talking straight with the American people. And that's what needs to be done at this point.
Well, it seems to me that, you know, with Secretary Geithner on point right now for the administration, talking to CNBC about this possible deal, that they're at least coming together and starting to circle the wagons. He also mentioned the fact that Representative Paul Ryan and Senator Tom Coburn are going to be part of the discussion relating to a possible debt and deficit deal. But when we go back and look at the plan, the second point he brought up was establish a clear time for putting these multi-year targets into place, which would make sense. We can't just take the whole apple into our mouth. We're going to have to take small bites on this in order for us to sustain economic viability. Is that accurate, Bob?
Absolutely.
So when we look at those two points, the third point he brought up was establish a credible enforcement mechanism for those targets. That begs the question of who enforces this? Who is the enforcement authority on this, Bob?
The only way to do it is to have guidelines. If they have marks you have to hit, and if you don't hit them, there is an automatic reaction, and that has to be put into the legislation.
But the
difficulty with that, and Al can speak to this better than anyone at the table, is Congress is really, not likely to want to give away, so to speak, their ability in this area to decide down the road what to do. But I think Geithner may be right. We're all going to have to join hands and jump off this bridge together.
What these guys up there need to understand is if this all goes to hell in a handbasket, nobody is safe. And therefore, taking a little bit of hit, political hit themselves, and everybody taking a little bit of a hit, makes sense.
Does it amount to members of Congress having to fall on their swords in some instances? Are we going to lose some members of Congress saying, I'm just going to take this bullet in the best interest of the future of our country?
Yeah, what I'm saying is they all have to kind of do that together.
It's hard, though, because you're running for re-election in about a year.
Exactly, but that's the reason it's so important to first help the American people understand the situation and why it's necessary. And if they do that, then you've got a fighting chance to go home and explain your votes. If they're still living in kind of a nirvana where this is just Washington, D.C. nonsense, and then their Social Security check gets cut or their taxes go up or something, they're going to be furious.
But I go back to the question is, if Secretary Geithner is talking about a deal that has enforcement, we've seen tons of rules and bills come out of Congress that have quote-unquote enforcement actions associated with it with no credible enforcement authority given to, whether you give it to Treasury, whether you give it to Justice, whether you give it to an independent commission. who would take responsibility for this, Ralph?
Well, then you have the creation of another agency, like they did after 9/11 with the creation of the Homeland Security Department. How much money is going to have to be invested in that, and salaries, and whether it's union or non-union. So you have to, if you're going to create this enforcement mechanism, how are you going to keep the cost down?
Well, Bob, who would be a viable enforcement mechanism, or how is there a viable enforcement mechanism in this?
As I understand it, what Geithner was talking about, the secretary was talking about, over a period of years, there will be a number of steps that will come that will have to be met.
Right.
And if those steps are not met, those targets are not met, automatically there'd be a kick-in of some action on the part of further cutting would be automatic in certain areas, and maybe certain taxes would be increased on certain projects.
And if the Congress wants a fig leaf so that it can argue that it hasn't given up its authority, then I can't believe I'm proposing this because I hate supermajorities. But you could write the law so that the only way you could override it would be with 2/3, 3/4, whatever you want.
Except there are many members of Congress on the Republican side that have signed a no new taxes pledge. So
yeah.
How do you get them to go along with something like this?
Well, I mean, the reality is we're looking at a Bush 41 situation where he comes back. I mean, you have to admit, President Bush, 41, our 41st president, actually took a silver bullet, which pretty much killed his possibilities for re-election, by saying, hey, look, I have to make a tough decision. If it means me falling on my sword, so be it. But the reality still dictates he took that bullet. I don't think we're going to see that kind of valiant effort in anybody today.
Certainly not if there isn't an educational program, and by golly, it's got to start right now. I mean, literally, I think the Secretary of Treasury, I think he said he can take certain steps that'll help him get through until July. But I don't think let's put it this way, if you hear more statements out of Standard & Poor's or Moody's about downgrading, we don't have until the last day, you know, like at midnight on Friday, like, you know, we did a couple of weeks ago. Because right away, the international financial community is going to start taking looks at saying, you know, we're not going to, we need a bigger interest rate, America.
Well, we've already seen that happen. We saw the FTSE in London take a huge hit upon that announcement. The DAX in Germany, the Nikkei took a slam when that was announced, and the Dow yesterday dropped 250 points.
This is why they waited so long to come out with this rating, because they did not want to disturb the international market.
Well, we are going to have to educate the public very, very quickly, and it's going to have to be the president leading it. It's going to have to be the leadership in Congress speaking up for it. It's going to have to be members going home and holding, you know, group meetings and say, this is really serious.
And I think serious hearings, not stacked hearings to prove one point or another, serious hearings that will give the media an opportunity. You know, why the media needs a hook to explain the 2 and 2 makes 4.
You know,
I don't understand.
But we've seen that, Al. We've seen this. I mean, you know, if you are the general member of the electorate in Kansas, you know, we saw this with the Bull Simpson Committee in their conference. When the Bull Simpson Commission came out, they came out with very definitive guidelines on how we get this in control. We did not take advantage of that. Now we're talking about creating another commission on top of a commission that was already created and gave some solid baseline results. At what point does the electorate say, this is all talk?
It all becomes a bureaucratic system. It's a huge amount of bureaucracy, and nothing gets done.
Al?
But what I am saying is that as we are beginning to play with these things, these various proposals, and what Geithner may be working out with Boehner now, but whatever, you still have an uneducated public in this area, and you can do this simultaneously. It would be better to do it sequentially, but you can do it simultaneously. And I think while they're doing their stuff in the back room, they could hold some hearings that could be very, very helpful.
But well, what are you going to do with the Tea Party? I mean, that's
I think they might get educated too.
Well, but I guess the question comes
talk
up
about
Al.
Naive.
But I mean, I guess the question comes up now and says, okay, at some point we've talked this to death. What we now have to deal with is solid, tangible, result-driven guidelines that say this is how we're going to get out of this hole.
See, a country like China, when there's a problem, they just fix it. No ands, buts, ifs. When we have a problem, we have committees, we have debates, we have discussions. And things may or may not get fixed. If they do, it's down the line. But the problem still persists.
So when we come back, we're going to take a quick break here. We're coming up on 20 till the hour. We're going to continue this discussion. But when we continue this discussion, I'd like to put it out to the table and say, hey, what are the true result-driven metrics that we have to come up with that's going to get us out of this hole? So we're going to talk about that here in 2 minutes. This is Backroom Politics, live from Shelley's Back Room on Blog Talk Radio. Stay with us.
Of the sun and west of the moon, we'll build a dream house of love.
Shelley's Back Room in downtown Washington, D.C., America's Cigar Tavern. This is Backroom Politics, live from Shelley's Back Room on Blog Talk Radio. For everybody out there listening in Radio Land, you can call in 619-638-8477. Again, that number is 619-638-8477. We're going to continue the discussion till the top of the hour on the fiscal crisis that's facing the U.S. For those who's joining us, we've been talking about the Standard & Poor's warning of a possible credit rating reduction for the U.S. bond, and also the tie-in to the debt ceiling vote and the debt ceiling issue. Where are we on the debt ceiling? We're about, what, 2 months out from hitting the ceiling?
I think we're about 2 months out if you stretch it out.
Right.
And Geithner, the Secretary of Treasury, says I think early July he can stretch it out that long. But as I said earlier, I don't think anybody who is in a decision-making position believes it makes any sense to drag it out. The sooner you get your answer on the table and look like you're solving the problem, the more likely you are not to have a problem with your debt ceiling management.
Well, Geithner knows that if nothing is done by July, OPEC is going to really start rebelling.
Well, we've got a situation right now where we've heard there's been a lot of talk. The Bull-Simpson Commission issued their findings to no avail. Nobody's really grasped onto these result-driven metrics of how we get ourselves out of this hole. And it seems that nobody has some clear ideas. So before the break, I asked everybody to think a little bit about what could we possibly do right now to fix the current fiscal situation that we're in. Bob, I'm going to start with you. What are some tangible metrics that we can come up with that might help us get out of this hole?
Well, before we get to metrics, we have to do one other thing. And Al has said it twice, and I'll say it the third time. We have to educate the public to a greater degree so they will be willing to accept the fact that while they may not understand all the ins and outs of international finance, that they believe that we are in the situation that we are factually in right now.
Well,
let me
ask this question. Al, when we talk about educating the public, what is the message? We're starting to see a little bit coming out of the White House, but there's got to be just one message to get out there.
The message is that we are in deep doo-doo, and if we don't do something about it, we will sink into the doo-doo. I mean, now there are a lot of ways of explaining that in more concrete terms, but that's what the public needs to understand. This is serious stuff.
You have to make it more difficult for people to be able to have access to credit cards, to be able to charge things.
How does that tie into the debt ceiling? My ability to get a credit card and me being able to pay the bill doesn't have a direct impact on the ability of the federal government to pay its bill, or does it?
Not right now, but down the line. When you have everyone living on borrowed money, that has a tremendous effect on the ability of the federal government.
Well, then we get into a possible catch-22 situation there where we saw it with the housing bust and the mortgage crisis, where there was no money flowing around and nobody could spend, and thus we go into what amounts to an airplane stall on the economy. So,
if you take everything you've said in this program, all of the bad things that could happen, all of which are accurate,
mm-hmm.
and Congress is in 2012 still fiddling around, you know, doing stupid things, ignoring well-thought-out commission proposals, not coming up with anything concrete. Is there a Huey Long out there anywhere?
What about making it more difficult to declare bankruptcy?
Well, but let me kind of finish. I'm deadly serious. I mean, that is a setup for a demagogue if I ever heard one. These yahoos have been working at it, and they haven't got anything done. Let me, on my white horse, ride in and save the country.
Well, I mean, that brings
I'm
up...
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
But that brings up a very valid point, Bob, is the idea of there's really nobody who has gone to the top of the mountain to really educate it in terms that does not include the Beltway speak that we talk here in Washington. Nobody's really done it. We need a Huey Long. Who could that possibly be?
I don't know who it could possibly be, but I do know, I think, the kind of a message that you'd want someone, hopefully the president, to say on national television, and damn soon. It's something like a family. Right now, the country is like a family that has its credit card limit all the way up, and it can't pay the bill. What's going to happen? Well, the bill collectors are going to come around, and they're going to start foreclosing on your house or taking your car or doing whatever they have to do to get their money out of you.
And traditionally what people will do is they declare bankruptcy because all of that is discharged.
That's what we're talking about. Now, you can put it a little more articulately than I did, but the point is that's what we're talking about. And we need somebody, the president, to do that. We need hearings to talk about what the problem is that are nationally televised. Look, you know, when the president's impeached, when somebody has a big, big problem like going to war, we have televised public hearings on every channel in the goddamn world. That's what we need.
But Al, we have that access right now. Just about everybody in America with a TV has access to C-SPAN now. We don't see people go to sleep watching C-SPAN. Are national televised hearings the solution now?
I would say yes. Watching Congress do its thing is not very entertaining, except on rare occasions, to be perfectly frank. Not because it's process. It's process, 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 and it doesn't convey things. A hearing conveys information. A hearing properly conducted can convey a lot of information. And in terms of who might be the person on the white horse, one, it doesn't have to be a man. There are a couple of women that it might be. And I don't know, has Donald Trump got any...
We'll talk about him later in the program. But you're looking
at a Chris Christie, who's very, very popular because he's telling it straight to the people of New Jersey.
That was going to be my suggestion. It's going to be a straight-talking, I don't care what... I can't make everybody happy speaker like Chris Christie. Maybe somebody like him, or if somebody even took that approach... It just seems that every time we see somebody on the Hill or we see somebody from the administration in front of a camera, we hear the standard double talk that we usually hear in the Beltway.
But that was before Standard and Poor's said we are in deep doo-doo. And they said it plainly and they said it publicly, and that's a different story. Now, if we're smart, we're going to get the kind of hearings, we're going to get the kind of presidential statement, we're going to get the kind of things we need to focus the public's attention.
Al,
and the reason you need to focus the attention and get some information out to the public is so that then the next step where we start proposing things that hurt, whether they're tax increases or spending cuts or what have you, the public has some idea of why it's happening.
Because right now the public does not trust Congress. Congress has very low approval ratings. And Congress has to gain the trust of the American people.
Yeah,
why
should they trust a bunch of bickering 2-year-olds in running a kindergarten?
Well, but it brings up a valid point. Is you're dealing with an entity that has an approval rating of, last number I saw was 23%. That means that roughly 8 in 10 people in this country believe that Congress is full of garbage.
Well, let's put it this way. If the president and his administration leadership and the congressional leadership are all out on the, you know, public airways talking about the seriousness of the problem and how we have got to take steps quickly. If we get a good education program going, the people are going to say, shit, you know, this is serious. Now, who's going to fix it? And the answer is the people who have to fix it are the Congress. The people who have to fix it are the administration. They are the leadership. And they, at that point, would be reasonably prepared to say, okay, guys, get your act together. I mean, who else can we do it? No one else can do it under our system. We don't have the ability to create some other function.
But
it has to be done by the system that we have in place.
Here's the problem, okay? And Politico is just coming out with a story right now going over President Obama's speech here, just only about 5 miles away in Annandale, Virginia, where he was talking about the debt and the deficit crisis. When he says stuff like this, the big question, and this is a quote from the president's speech, the big question is going to have to be resolved. That is, how do we do it? If the president is asking how do we do it without giving definitive answers, what kind of confidence is the American public going to have in our ability to get out of this? Al?
That's what I'm saying. I don't think the public has any confidence in anybody here. We've got a bunch of Lilliputians that are afraid to stand up and do it and tell them what they need. And what Bob and I are suggesting is that maybe if you can provide sufficient information to the public, you may develop some courage in the members of Congress who will be willing to take some first steps.
I don't think if I were a member of the administration in a financial responsibility area, or if I were a member of the United States Senate or the House of Representatives, I don't think that I could hear what Standard & Poor's said and not come to the very quick conclusion the next morning I'm either fixing my hairdo or shaving my face. I don't think I could come to the conclusion that I can do anything except get very seriously involved in finding a quick solution for this problem. And in fact, I would have to say to myself, if I'm a Republican, you know, I'm going to have to think about at least some kind of revenue increases. And if I were a Democrat, I think I'd have to say, I am going to have to accept the fact that there are going to be cuts in programs which I support and do not want to cut, but I'm going to have to cut anyway.
Well, but there are
both of those.
But there are people on both Democrat and Republican sides that will not take that approach, and that's why you have an impending government shutdown.
And that's why you have to get education out, because you have to educate people back home to start yelling, what the hell is going on up here?
And you have to prevent people like Michelle Bachmann from coming out.
Yeah.
Well, and in fairness to the president, the president did say later on in the speech that if we're going to have some sort of solution to this crisis, he says, and I quote, you have to have spending cuts, but you can't cut things like education or basic research or infrastructure down to the bone.
Mm-hmm.
But here's a situation where the president's saying, okay, you know what, we do have to compromise, but you're not going to touch these programs.
Well, no, he didn't say we're not going to touch these programs. He said we can't cut them to the bone. Now, there's a difference.
Okay.
There's a difference. You know, we have to decide what has to be done in the way of spending and what is nice to be done and we'd like to do. We're going to have to make some real hard decisions, and we're going to have to raise revenues that the Republicans will have a hard time swallowing, but this is not the time for deciding that my ideology is more important than the security of the United States government.
You could have a true third party movement at that point.
Which, I'll tell you, this country right now, I still contend, cannot deal with a third party in our current political state. It's just not a reality. The idea of having a coalition government, we can't even have the two parties come to the table. You throw a third party into that, and we've got all kinds of chaos ruling.
If the only way a third party is going to come in place is if we don't do anything, the whole damn thing explodes. Where you know, this time next year we're in a disaster, and there's going to be a third party called We Ain't Them, and they're going to
have no label.
We ain't those dumb shits who fuck everything.
Bob, we're on the air. Bob, it's internet radio.
Pardon me.
We're internet radio, but my God, Bob. Bob, by the way, the views and expressions of Bob Hines are not necessarily those of Backroom Politics or First Congress Society.
It does suggest to me that I should apologize for a little lack of civility a while ago. I'll let Bob.
Bob's got you beat. I'll tell you.
All I did was call them 2-year-olds and Lilliputians.
Yeah, but wow.
But let me make this.
But let me just say this, though.
But I
this, no. But I will say this, though. What this does demonstrate is, it does demonstrate, you know, the passion that everybody's got to have in order for this to be successful, in order for this to be made right. I mean, this is a serious situation that unfortunately is going to get a lot of people riled up, i.e. our colleague Bob Hines, but that's the type of enthusiasm and passion for a solution that we need all Americans to feel, not just like, well, it's not going to affect me here in Des Moines, Iowa, I don't care. And we see a lot of that today. There's a lot of complacency out there on the situation. That's got to be reversed. There's no question about that.
Citizen participation has to be the key.
Exactly, exactly.
And I wanted to say one other thing. I have defended the Congress over the years vigorously because it's a difficult, complicated institution. It's hard to understand, and it does things often right that look silly and wrong. What I was trying to address is the fact that these guys don't seem to be willing to step up to this issue one way or another. And that's what's got to change. And that's where we get back to education.
Right. Well, let's do this. We're going to take a break before the top of the hour. We're going to take 2 minutes out. We'll continue this discussion. This is obviously a very sensitive discussion at a very critical point in our country's history.
Bob has other swear words he wants to use.
Yeah. We're going to have a little discussion on censorship and the filter with Bob.
Yes, I'm going to have to be quiet.
He has a good lawyer representing.
That's true.
We're putting on a 10-second delay.
Well, thank God the SEC doesn't regulate this. So this is Backroom Politics live from Shelley's Back Room on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Stay with us. Shelley's Back Room, 1331 F Street in the heart of our nation's capital. This is the top of the hour, the second hour of Backroom Politics live from Shelley's Back Room on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your moderator, Justin Russell. With me, as always, is the former 8-term member of Congress, Al Swift. Also joining me across the table from me is our potty mouth member of the round table, the Honorable Bob Hines.
He knows one of the words that you can't say.
Yeah. All of a sudden, the George Carlin routine comes back to us. And our international affairs expert, Dr. Ralph Winnie, is here at the table. For those of you listening out there in Radio Land, you can call in with your questions on anything political. Call in at 619-638-8477. Again, that number is 619-638-8477. we're going to continue the discussion on the financial crisis that's facing the U.S. Right now, where we have a Standard & Poor's warning coming out yesterday of a possible downgrade of U.S. Treasury bonds to a possible AA or single A rating, God forbid a triple B rating. And we're also dealing with about a 60-day threshold of hitting our heads on our proverbial debt ceiling. So now we've talked about this, and we've talked about the passion. You know, you asked a great question at the break, Bob. I'm going to bring it up. Is where are some of our superstars? Where are some of our, you know, out-of-the-box, ready-to-go, just-speak-their-mind politicians? You mentioned Dave Obey before. Now, Al, you mentioned Dave Obey. Where is Dave Obey? Obviously, a retired member of Congress now, but it's almost like we long for him to be back here just for this purpose. Who are some of the others that you know from the Hill who were saying, hey, now's your chance to step up? Who are these people? Where are they?
Well, I would suggest that I know, I would think probably one of the people who needs to step up on the Republican side is Dave Camp. Dave is the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. He needs to step up. The leadership needs to step up. All the leadership needs to step up.
And arguably, we're big fans of Speaker Boehner, but we haven't seen the Speaker a lot in this.
The Speaker is not the one. We have talked earlier about the fact that there appears to be an unfinished but somewhat prepared omelet of a solution. Everybody's working it together. Reid of the Senate, and Boehner of the House, and the President, apparently, according to the Secretary of Treasury, have got some kind of a formed idea of what they're going to have to do. Now, obviously, it's not the part of the members of the Congress, either the Democrat or the Republican leadership, to come out first. It's got to be the President. The President is the agenda setter in our form of government, and as soon as the President speaks up, others can stand up and say, yes, we're going to push.
But again, I go back to the question, nobody's leading us to water.
That's right. Well, unfortunately, I would say unfortunately for the leaders who need to come forward, I think they would have all liked to have been able to come forward before the potential bond lowering value, changing the rules.
Right.
I think they would have loved to come out ahead of time on that. But what it shows is, quite frankly, that what happened with the Standard & Poor's is not influenced by the government or anybody trying to, say don't do it or don't do it. They went off and did what they were going to do.
Right.
Well, that's good.
Al, from a Democratic standpoint, is Secretary Geithner the right voice that we should hear or we want to hear from the administration?
The right voice belongs to a fellow named Barack Obama. And if he has Geithner out putting together something that he can then use to make that stand, that's an appropriate use of presidential staff. But he hasn't shown a lot of interest in this or on the health care bill or some other things to really take that kind of lead. Harry Truman would have been thundering around a lot. Lyndon Johnson would have had a plan and been in there.
Well, Obama's trying to run for re-election, so that sort of impacts.
Well, everybody's
you're not going to get re-elected if you don't support.
Oh, there's no question about it. That's a disturbing statement, is that if in fact he's too worried about running in 2012, at some point,
why do you think the Democrats won't have a budget in Congress? Because they were concerned about the election.
Here's my take on this. Is if in fact that's the mentality, that we're worried about 2012.
And it's on both sides.
I agree. But if in fact we're worried about 2012, the disturbing thought of that comment is that, you know what we need is we need another Bush 41. We need that type of leadership to say this is not about re-election. This is not about me holding office for another term. This is about me being able to survive in arguably the greatest nation that this world's ever seen.
The situation has to become truly dire for that person to emerge. There's still a lot of people in
that
country that are
the
doing
situation's
well.
Not dire now, Bob.
That's not dire now because there's still people that are doing well economically.
Bob?
There's an old saying, there's nothing like a hanging to focus your mind. I would suggest that there isn't a politician in this, in the elected official or a high administration official in this city tonight who doesn't think, if we as a group, if all of us together can't solve this problem, none of us are going to be here after 2012. We're all going to be out of office.
If I were still in Congress, and this whole field of economics is not my bag. I'm not that knowledgeable about it and so forth. But I would want to be able to go home right now, and I would like to say, be able to say, this is what I am doing about it. And I don't think that there are very few congressmen that can say that. The Tea Party are all off saying what they won't do, but they're not telling us what they are going to do. The Republicans have come forward with Chairman
Ryan,
and they've kind of done that. They've got something laid out there, and presumably the president or Geithner is putting something together. But we've got to stop chatting and start doing. And I would be very, very upset with the leadership of my party if I had to go home to this recess and just wring my hands about, isn't it awful, but not be able to offer anything concrete to me.
If people are willing to stand up and hold their congressman accountable, that's one thing. But the situation, I feel, has to become truly dire, not just in a Standard and Poor's rating, but you have to see literally millions of people out of work, massive unrest, similar to what happened in the Weimar Republic.
Well, I mean, Bob, you had a comment.
Al said something very interesting. You know, we're now into the congressional recess for Easter.
Right.
Members have gone home. A lot of members, and I'm sure some of them are, and many of them are having
town hall meetings.
And I'm sure that those who aren't are being sought out by their local media to say, what do you think of what Standard & Poor's has said? So I would think that it's particularly unfortunate that the two parties had not had a few days to put together some working papers on this subject so that the members could go back home more fully advised on the options and what needs to be done and what the party is thinking of doing, because it would be a wonderful chance to begin the educational process.
Al, if we don't see a collective message coming out of the Hill, you know that the members going back to the districts are going to have a hard time putting this together and getting some semblance of success out of their trip home. Is this going to be a wake-up call for the members of Congress, do you think? Is this recess going to be the one that says, hey, you know what, smarten up or we'll find somebody who will?
I would hope so. But I think Bob mentioned, or you mentioned, the talking points that both parties should have given. If those talking points are the talking points we've been hearing for the last few months, it's not going to help.
Worthless.
It's their fault, not ours, and it's going to be, I won't raise your taxes, and I won't cut your Social Security. But if they come back having said to themselves, we got to have some answers, then I think it will be very useful, and we may see, one, some courage developing, two, some ideas that are being laid on the table and get debated and so forth.
Well, the interesting thing is going to be what's going to happen to the new health care bill, because Republicans have consistently claimed that it's very, very expensive and it's hurting our economy. Now, with this new Standard and Poor's rating, does that give added impetus to the Tea Party and to the Republicans for a true repeal of this health care bill?
Well, it may, except I think it would be ill-advised, given what our goal is, to mix the two issues or the three issues. Clearly, when you start saying you're going to cut something, you're going to have to bring in another issue. You're going to cut the defense budget, you got to debate. You're going to cut Medicare, you got to debate. That's fine. But to take on what was so clearly a partisan issue and make it really the issue rather than solving the budget crisis, I think would be a disadvantage to the American people.
I think it would be a catastrophe if that's what happened.
Well, you know, Ralph, you talked about it, you know, a dire situation. I will tell you that my opinion, this is about as dire as it gets. I can tell you that the ripple effect of just the announcement yesterday is already affecting the stock market. Now, the stock market's been up a little bit today. They recovered a little bit. But it's affecting our stock market. It's affecting the global markets as we speak.
But there's still a lot of people that are very insular in this country.
No, I would disagree. I would sit there and tell you that anybody who thinks that they're insular from this is living in a dream world.
I agree with that, but there are still a lot of people that don't think it has an impact.
I can tell you right now that Warren Buffett, and I got to tell you something, Warren Buffett is the type of thought leadership where he comes out and says, look, I'm willing to pay my 15%, okay? The gods have been very good to me. I'm willing to pay for that. We don't see that type of leadership coming out of industry, and those are the people that would be theoretically insulated from that. What we don't see is organizations like Bob, no disrespect to your former employer, GE, coming out and saying, you know what, maybe it is time that we belly up. We don't see organizations such as the large banks or the large petrochemical organizations
right.
that sit there and say, hey, you know what, maybe it is time for us to cowboy up and pay our share into it.
What Obama's trying to do now is to go after people that have offshore bank accounts to bring that revenue back into this country as a way to create jobs.
And that may be the case, but I would say, Al, you know, when we look at some of, you know, everybody's got ideas on how to solve this, but nobody's actually put it into a really tight package and said, here, the closest one I would say that's out there right now is the Chairman Ryan budget for 2012. That's the most sustainable piece of connecting the financial dots in a budget that we've seen in arguably 20 years. Am I wrong in that?
That has been laid on the table. Why we haven't had the commissions thing laid on the table. I don't know why the other one with the woman
Rivlin and Peterson. Yeah, there were four.
Because once you get specifics on the table, then you can start dealing. Then you can start working. You can start trying to come up with a comprehensive approach. Until you've got ideas on the table, you're just blowing smoke.
Yeah. But the ideas are there.
The ideas are on the table in my mind. They're out there. I think between the four proposals, the president's latest one, Chairman Ryan's one on the Republican side, and then the two independent groups, so to speak, the Bowles-Simpson Commission and Alice Rivlin and Pete Peterson, both knowledgeable financial people, and put those four on the table. You've got enough to work with.
There's a hell of an agenda for a hearing.
Yeah, right. Agreed.
Go ahead. The problem with Ryan is Democrats are coming out and saying that it's not cost-saving, it's strictly cost-shifting, the burden in some way.
And there may be some truth to that. There may well be some truth to that. And there's probably some truth to the criticisms that Republicans make of Democratic proposals. There usually is. But to take all these ideas that you've got of there and see how you can put them together, it's like a jigsaw puzzle. You know, you've got to figure out how the pieces fit. That takes a while, but you got to get started.
And time's a waste of it.
It is. We're going to take a two-minute break. We're coming up on 20 past the hour here on the East. Actually, 20 past the hour everywhere. This is Backroom Politics live on Blog Talk Radio. Stay with us.
Thank you.
down, 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 down.
It's 20 past the hour here.
Excuse me,
in Washington,
I'm making
D.C.
love over here.
Like, ow! 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 This is Backroom Politics Live. This is Backroom Politics Live from Shelley's Back Room on Blog Talk Radio. We now are going to have to set parameters here. With me is the always lecherous Al Swift, the foul-mouthed Bob Hines, and... God knows whatever Ralph's saying, Dr. Ralph Winnie. I'm your host. My name is Mud. We're continuing the discussion. So much for having a legitimate political talk show. We're going to continue on talking about the financial crisis that's facing the U.S. right now. But, you know, just to kind of finish off that topic and go into other topics real quick. We were talking at the break, you know, having a joint commission, whether it's Erskine Bowles, whether it's Pete Peterson and Kim,
Alice Rivlin,
having all those, and we got breaking news out of CNN right now. Apparently, the plane that Mrs. Obama is flying on. She was flying on a military cargo plane. Apparently, they aborted a landing with Mrs. Obama on board. That's not a good thing for the Air Force.
No.
Okay. That's even better. So, an air traffic control issue. Oh, this is going to be
some
rich.
Some lawyer's going to make a lot of money.
I was going to say, right now, the large screaming sound you hear from Constitution Avenue, that would be Secretary La Hood going absolutely ape over air traffic control safety. But going on back to topic, I want to finish out the discussion we were talking about with the financial crisis. We talk about the joint commissions. We talk about Erskine Bowles. We talk about the Bowles-Simpson Commission and the multitude of other commissions that have been out there. When we talk about those commissions, they've obviously put some tangible proposals in place that nobody has latched on to. We have the proposal budget that came out from Chairman Ryan from Wisconsin. We also have both presidential budget requests, the original and now the new and improved budget request from the White House. We have all these suggestions on the table. Bob, you were talking about maybe just having one large televised joint committee hearing. Al, I think your idea of making that just mandatory viewing, do it in prime time. I think now's the time that everybody needs to cowboy up and say, hey, we all have to take responsibility. Would it be watched, do you think, Al? You're a former broadcaster.
I think it would be watched. I think that it would need to be run carefully by the chair to be sure that it was getting information out and not getting into, as I said, your mother wears army boots. And if he did so, it could be very, very educational for the public. You'll never get the networks to do it.
Right.
Because they'd be giving up an incredible amount of revenue.
Could it rise to the level of the Iran-Contra hearing in the mid-'80s?
I mean, that was must-see TV back in the day. But I would also say we also didn't have the 24-hour news cycle that we had back then. Would you agree with that, Al?
Yeah, I agree with that. It would really be interesting to really put it to the networks.
It would.
to see if they are willing to step up at a crisis time in our nation's history and devote those hours. I would think it would be a several day hearing. I think it could be. I think that each network could take a day.
If the president and Senator Reid and Speaker Boehner all made a formal request, how could they resist?
And I think on the international level, it would send a strong signal to countries that the U.S. is serious about getting the fiscal situation in order.
Well, I will tell you that it's something that the American public has got to get involved in. They've got to take ownership. There's no question about it. Seeing the breaking news out of CNN about the First Lady's plane having to do what they call in pilot terms a go-around because of a possible mishap with a military plane on the runway, I got to tell you something. Right now, Secretary La Hood has got to be having some real deep, deep discussions with Administrator Babbitt over at FAA. We have seen, some of the funding cuts that we talk about the infrastructure cuts. One of the infrastructure issues that we haven't talked about is air traffic safety. And one of the areas that we really need to focus on is that this is crazy. We've got the most secure airport in the country in Reagan National Airport, and a controller falls asleep, and they got planes just kind of in a free-for-all. You've got a situation that just erupted the other day where an air traffic controller was watching a movie and had his finger on the push-to-talk button and was broadcasting a movie on air traffic control frequencies.
Well, this is not funny. We shouldn't be laughing.
It's not funny. I mean, this is a serious, serious situation. When you guys, I look at Bob and Al when we talk about this, air traffic control, I mean, we are a nation of air traffic. There's no question. We don't have any high-speed rail infrastructure. Our interstate infrastructure is crumbling. Our most tangible mode of transportation right now is, in fact, air traffic. When you guys were on the floor, we obviously didn't deal with those issues because back then our air traffic control system was fairly modern in the 60s and 70s and 80s. We're now dealing with an antiquated infrastructure. Is there a way that you guys see that we can spark some sort of discussion that says, hey, look, not just air traffic, but our entire transportation infrastructure has to be addressed? And we're talking cuts and austerity. Do we talk about maybe cutting funding to FAA for air traffic control? Al?
I don't think cutting funding is what is necessary, probably increasing funding. But here's what I have thought. Do y'all, when you're driving along, do you ever give speeches in your car? I have given some speeches as though I were the president, in which I would say, look, the reason that public works are in such, generally speaking, public works legislation is in such low esteem is we've had too many bridges to nowhere and all of that kind of stuff. As president, I want to see us establish a prioritization of the things that need to be done in our transportation system. I want to put together an expert panel that will come up and basically say the first thing we've got to do is this, the second thing we've got to do is that, and I will veto any bill that contains things that are not going down that list of priorities that has been set by experts. And in that way, I think I could then push for increased spending on the infrastructure and be able to assure the public that we're not building bridges to nowhere.
Bob, is that something that you think that the public would want to hear? I mean, especially with the media attention that the air traffic control crisis, and I'll call it a crisis, is that something that the American public wants to hear, or do they just take for granted the fact that I get on a plane, the plane's safe, it lands?
Let me put it this way. That was probably their view 2 weeks ago.
Well, what about the any unused money from the stimulus package? That should immediately go into infrastructure development.
I don't disagree. I will tell you in full disclosure, number one, I'm a pilot. I've used the air traffic control system successfully for, I've had a pilot's license now for 10 years. My uncle is a retired air traffic controller, spent 25 years. He was hired after the Reagan fires. To hear the stories that I personally experienced and that he would tell me of just the type of stress that job entails, and then to hear these guys are working 16-hour shifts, taking 8 hours off, going to another 16-hour shift, it is amazing to me that these guys are doing the job they are, looking at a screen and trying to keep everybody in visual separation.
You're going to have to bring in people from other countries to bring up the
slack. No, I don't want people from other countries.
We've done it for other industries like nurses and doctors.
We can find Americans.
I'm sure we can find Americans.
I'll tell you this. We also need, when we're talking about this, not only deal with the immediate crisis, but because Reagan fired all the guys, we hired new ones, they're going to be retiring kind of as a generation.
That's true. My uncle was part of that. He retired almost 8 years ago.
And so we need to have a program in which we deal with that. I don't know how, but you start hiring people of different ages and so forth,
right,
so you can get a rotation going,
right,
so that in the future
you go into the universities and start recruiting now.
But you need to not arrive at a point every so often where you're running a whole bunch of brand new, inexperienced, just trained people.
Right.
You want to have a layered
exactly.
population
and
of people in those seats.
Would take a
and I can tell you right now that doesn't exist. I mean, you know, the controllers want to go to the high priced areas. They want to go to New York. They want to go to L.A. They want to go to Miami. They want to come here to Washington. No, the controllers don't want to go to Topeka Center. They don't want to go to Butte, Montana, and run the tower there. One of the things that somebody suggested the other day was several of these smaller airports. I know one in Florida that I used to fly into routinely, New Smyrna Beach, Florida, and Titusville, Florida. They have contractors. They have contract air traffic controllers that used to do it in the Air Force. They retired from air traffic controllers, and they go to some of these less busy spots. Maybe that's a solution, is going to a contractor-based system of air traffic controllers. Don't touch my cigar, Al.
I'm already smoking one of yours.
But I got to tell you something. You know, the question, and I have to give credit to Secretary LaHood. Secretary LaHood has absolutely done a good job.
He has
done a great job in coming forward and saying, look, this is my problem. I'm going to fix this. Don't worry about it. And he came up with several legitimate and viable solutions, one of them being instead of 8 hours, 9 hours before, you know, increasing the time before they can come back on shift.
And what he's dealing with now, though, is the current problem. And what I'm suggesting is that when he can find a little time, he's got a long-range problem that needs to be dealt with as well.
I absolutely agree. Absolutely agree.
May mean bringing in people from other countries in the interim.
Why are you continuously trying to find
Chinese
air traffic controllers jobs?
There are a lot of Mexicans who would like the jobs.
We're bringing people from other countries and for other.
We've obviously gone down a slippery slope. We've digressed.
You've got to look at the best talent anywhere in the world. This is a global society. We bring in the best.
We've so gone far down this hill. We're going to take a 1 minute break here. We're going to regroup. When we come back, we're going to talk about something almost equally as funny. That's Donald Trump for president. This is Blog Talk Radio's Backroom Politics, live from Shelley's Back Room. We'll be back in 1 minute. Our nation's capital. This is Backroom Politics, live from Shelley's Backroom on Blog Talk Radio. You can join the insanity today by dialing in 619-638-8477. Again, that number is 619-638-8477. We're getting more news in about the First Lady's landing go around. Apparently, the plane that Mrs. Obama was flying in, did a go-around and almost hit a military cargo plane. Al, there's a lot of qualified air traffic controllers out there, including those working for the Aeronautical Administration of the great country of Mexico.
Well, I made the comment about higher Mexicans. That was intended as kind of a jab at the people who are objecting to all the illegals.
Right.
It didn't quite sound like that. Obviously, there are extremely well-qualified
air traffic
controllers in Mexico.
Right. There are. Having talked to them once or twice, they're very qualified. But the topic at hand right now is something equally as amusing, is the idea of Donald Trump running for president. Shockingly, Donald Trump is now, depending on which poll you look at, in either first place or second place in the Republican run for the 2012 presidency. Donald Trump gave an interview to Savannah Guthrie this morning on the Today Show, which they rebroadcast on Daily Rundown, which we're a huge fan of here at Backroom Politics. When we look at Donald Trump's answers, such as number one, Is there a right to privacy clause in the U.S. Constitution? And when a future candidate for the presidency of the United States says, sure, of course there is, that's got to give you pause. Al, as a Democrat here at the table, how much does that just solidify a possible second term for President Obama?
Well, I doubt if he's going to go anywhere. But if he does, it will be as a demagogue example. He's a birther and all of that. And if he I think he has become enough of a joke that it's not likely to happen. And I've watched him on some places as a potential presidential candidate, and he's just not to be taken seriously.
But he's been pretty much running with the birther issue, which, you know, that issue is so 2010.
And so demonstrably wrong.
Right.
But he thinks he can win the primary by catering to those people.
I agree, but, you know, we're seeing a lot of politicians who have been moving away. Governor Jan Brewer out in Arizona, she kind of rescinded her birther issue as a bill in Arizona. But yet we also look at states like Georgia, who's now taken up the birther issue. At what point do we just stop and say, look, he is the legitimate seated president of the United States. We've got other crises to deal with. How about coming up with some good ideas instead of worrying about a copy of the president's birth certificate from Hawaii?
Well, the state of Hawaii has certified repeatedly that he was born there. That should be enough to end the debate.
Birth notices in the newspaper. And
the interview with the nurse, right?
I mean,
who delivered him.
It would, It's ridiculous.
You would
have to believe that at the time of his birth, for some unknown reason, his mother decided that she was going to, wherever she was going to make sure that it sounded like it was Hawaii. And, you know, you can't, there's notice in the newspaper. You can't plan, you know, 10 days after the birth of your child to decide he's going to be present. You got to fake it in Hawaii. I mean, how silly is that?
Well, it is so silly, it's hard to believe that anybody would believe it, let alone somebody who's basing a presidential run on that basis. It is bound to be, if he gets serious, that will be torn out from under him, and there goes his entire platform, at least as it has been presented.
But Bob, as a longstanding member of the Republican Party, and with your knowledge of the RNC, how is it that the folks down at the Capitol Hill Club are just not having a conniption over Donald Trump?
Who says they're not?
Interesting point.
I don't know, but I would put it this way. You know, everybody who looked, there have been people who ran who were just as silly as other people have run, like Trump. I mean, look at Ross Perot. Ross Perot cost George Bush 41, George H.W. Bush, the presidency, because he got 20% of the vote. And I don't think anybody at this table, and I don't think anybody I know has ever thought that Ross Perot was anything but silly, thinking that his daughter's wedding was being attacked or something. I mean,
he jumped out of the race and then got back in.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
and that made it even more absurd.
He did all kinds of silly things. They got 20% of the vote.
Justin?
So, yeah, go ahead.
Ask me the same question.
All right. Al, how is it that the folks at the Capitol Hill Club are not having a total conniption over Donald Trump?
Have you ever been in the Republican Club?
Because they have got so many idiots that are running that they can't.
That was civil? That was civil?
I knew this was.
I gotta tell you something, Al. And for those of you who are listening, we're members of the First Congress Society, which promotes civility. We're not into name calling.
I wish to state that Al is sitting back, smiling and smoking his cigar.
but Al, seriously, when you look at the current slate of possible Republican candidates, President Obama obviously is going to be the Democratic nominee. When you look at the current slate of Republican candidates out there, you have Tim Pawlenty, who has said he's running for president. No, it's just an exploratory committee. You look at Mitt Romney, who has formed an exploratory committee. Under the laws of the FEC, if you form an exploratory committee, you're running for president pretty much.
Pretty much.
So that's pretty much saying we're running for president. Call it semantics. But when you look at the current slate and then you throw Donald Trump in there, who's actually getting credibility because of the fact that he's got an incredibly insane hairdo, on top of the fact that he's got – no, that's not – that's civil. That's civil. I gotta look. That's civil.
But Justin, here's the
– Gary Trudeau in his column in Doonesbury has got that part down cold.
Oh, yeah.
If you haven't been looking at the cartoon, look at it.
But Justin, here's the bottom line. If you believe in fiscal responsibility, accountability, balancing your budget – how can you elect someone like Donald Trump who's had several bankruptcies?
He says his
That's
response
right, three of them.
He says that basically he knows how to run a business. Now there's no question that he's worth whether it's hundreds of millions or a billion, that's arguable.
So he goes into bankruptcy and then starts another business.
Right.
And then goes into bankruptcy and starts
third
business.
His plan is to bankrupt this country and then move to another country
and start a casino
right.
there. it bothers me. It really does bother me.
Here's the problem: neither party, any party, can control who decides to announce they're going to run on that party.
Correct.
This is not the Republicans' fault. It's happened to both parties. I could name a couple of candidates that ran on the Democratic ticket in the last election. I won't.
You won't.
But
I won't either.
Who were
some of them from your home state of Ohio, might
yes.
I add, sir.
I,
but we won't say anything.
We won't name names. but I can, even at the local level, I can remember. We once had a guy who was running for the state legislature. This is out in Washington State. And he had come up with this platform. He was not a very bright person. But he was going to deal with the death penalty issue because he was going to have what he called a humanitarian death penalty. Namely, you never told the guy when it was going to happen. therefore, that would be all right. And I always had this image. I wanted Oliphant to draw of this poor convicted man sitting on a stool with his eyes, you know, obviously hadn't slept, and within his hands between his knees, sitting there, you know, worrying about when it's going to happen. And then there is a priest and a hangman tippy-toeing up behind him. They're going to drive him off. He didn't win anything, but the party had, and the Republicans would tease us over this candidate, you know, but what can you do?
But with living proof that I believe that CNN listens to this show, but they won't declare it, CNN is now talking about Sarah Palin, and is Sarah Palin being drowned out by Donald Trump? You have to admit, since Donald Trump's gotten on his soapbox, we haven't seen a lot of the former Alaskan governor. Now, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, you can debate that all day long, but...
She was been covered up, blown out of the race, whatever you want to say, by...
Michelle Bachmann. Right.
Bachmann got there before Trump. And so the question is Trump going to knock Bachmann out?
Well,
and I don't think so.
Well, there's a difference between Donald Trump and Michelle Bachmann. Michelle Bachmann is a member of Congress. Donald Trump is arguably he's a showman. He's the P.T. Barnum incarnate of the Republican ticket.
Well, now he's just stumbled over the abortion issue, so that is going to
be interesting. How did he do that? Tell me that. I didn't hear that.
It's just on the news. He basically didn't give an answer one
yeah,
way or the
yeah,
other. He waffled on it.
Yeah, he's back and forth on it.
That'll hurt him with the religious conservatives.
Yeah. There are so many
and
problems.
And everybody else.
Yeah, exactly. when we talk about here in the last 10 minutes about you know the 2012 election, Donald Trump, and I'll put this out as a question for the table, is Donald Trump running for president 90 days from now, Al?
No.
Bob?
No.
Ralph?
Yes, but shortly thereafter, I don't think so.
Now, the correct answer here is no, going John McLaughlin on everybody. The answer is no, he is not running. For. We pay homage to everybody, whether it's Chris Matthews, John McLaughlin, we all got our start somewhere.
Yeah.
Last 10 minutes of the show, we're going to go freeform right now and talk about just about anything that's on everybody's mind. We're going to start off with Tell Me a Story. Now then, last week, Ralph came out with a declaration that said that South Korea, and who was the third? Brazil. We're going to...
Colombia.
That's it. We're going to be... we were going to enter into a free trade agreement with those countries.
By the summer.
Within 48 hours, that announcement came out. So again, Ralph scoops everybody else.
Or he's a damn good spy.
Yeah, that's true too. So Ralph, we're going to start with you. Tell me a story.
The Israeli government met with the new Egyptian government about the Israeli-Egyptian peace treaty. What has happened is this new Egyptian government wants Israel to make peace with the Palestinians first, before revisiting this whole issue of an Israeli-Egyptian treaty.
Right.
They've said, you've had this treaty with us for so long, we can't guarantee we're going to continue with this treaty. You have to start by making peace with the Palestinians.
Do you think that that's going to force the hand of Tel Aviv into possibly recognizing a Palestinian state?
Stay tuned. It's going to be very interesting.
Wow.
The Israelis are very nervous about what's going on in Egypt. The fact that if they cannot get this peace treaty agreed upon, it's going to force their hand into dealing with the Palestinians.
Wow. Interesting story. Do you foresee a day, Al, in your years of dealing with the Israeli-Palestinian issue in Congress and just keeping your hand on the pulse of that, do you foresee a day where Tel Aviv will recognize the Palestinian state, or we're not going to see that in our lifetime?
Well, I don't know whether we'll see it in our lifetime. I could get hit by a bus in 10 minutes from now when I walk across.
God forbid.
Well, they have to make it sincere enough.
But I believe it's inevitable.
Yeah.
And it's inevitable in their own self-interest.
Right.
It'll take them a while to get there.
Bob, tell me a story.
Well, I don't have a story, but I have a one-liner, more or less, that I saw recently. We're talking earlier today about the financial situation the government is. We talked about how the market moved very quickly yesterday when Standard & Poor's had indicated they might downgrade the American bond values. Gold hit $1,500 an ounce today.
Oh!
An all-time record high.
Oh!
Now, what does that tell you? Well, it tells you that some people who would invest in bonds, American bonds, are putting their money in gold, and they're putting it in gold fast enough that the price of gold is going up. Now, that's pretty serious. That's the all-time record, and it ain't a good sign about what the financial universe thinks about the ability of the American government to solve this problem.
That's disturbing trend. That has got to be a very disturbing trend. Ralph, I'm going to go to you with this question. Do you see a day where we can start seeing the dollar come back as the international currency of record, or are we past that?
I think we can, but we've got to really make deep sacrifices in this country.
Wow.
We've got to stimulate small business and economic growth.
Wow.
And work with bringing in more international companies into the U.S.
Right. Well, Al, tell me a story.
I have a story, a serious one, and you mentioned the one-liner, so made me think of it. Not a joke, but a cartoon that I saw originally in Playboy about 40 years ago. I saw it repeated in, I think, The New Yorker about 8 years ago, redrawn, but it was exactly the same thing. And I love this cartoon. It is a person who is being strung up to the post to be burned. He's going to be burned at the stake. And the guard is applying the flames to him, and this guy is just screaming at the audience. And the line is, "It's things like this that keep good people out of public office."
Wow, that's brilliant. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
And Al, thank you for going theater of the mind on us. That was
very well
spoken.
Yeah. I could be so wrong on this, but I have in the back of my head the fact that if you've watched how the president has functioned on health care and some other things, I think that while he's doing it differently than almost any other president, certainly in my lifetime, I think he comes in at the end. Instead of trying to be at the front and guide it, he comes in at the end and effects a solution. So I think ultimately Barack Obama will bring this crisis of our economy, or at least the issue of how we're going to reduce our debt. I think he will come in and solve it before the election is made.
Well, then that being the case, I ask the question to the table, do we in fact vote to raise the debt ceiling in the next 30 days, Al?
You always have to raise the debt ceiling.
Bob?
You have to do it. It probably won't come as soon as 30 days. That would be the middle of May. I would suggest it will probably happen by either the end of May or the first part of June. I don't. The closer you get to, you know, the early July period, the more you scare the bejesus out of the international financial people. So the sooner you do it, the better.
Right.
But I don't think they can do it in a month. And the reason I don't is because of the question we were talking about earlier, the education requirement to the public, so they understand why the members of Congress are doing what they're doing, which is, if you're a Democrat, you're going to be saying, I'm cutting programs. And if you're a Republican, you're going to be saying, I got to raise revenues.
So basically, it's the tell the story first, vote later issue. Ralph?
I think they're going to raise it, but they have to demonstrate to the international community they're doing a good job of reining in the debt. And the way they do that is showing there's significant cuts and balancing the budget.
I will tell you my thought on this is that I think that everybody's scared about the Standard & Poor's announcement. I think they're going to do it in 30 days. I think they're going to do it, at least from what I'm hearing, they're going to do it as a preemptive measure of saying, unless you want to go through this again in the next 5 years, we're going to have to make some fixes. So they're going to vote to raise the debt ceiling in 30 days, then bring the deficit question forward as kind of a reversal of fortune.
Well, the sooner they do it, the better off we are.
Agreed. I think that's starting to resonate up on the Hill. We're in the last couple of minutes of the show. On behalf of Congressman Al, Bob Hines, Ralph Winnie, I'm your moderator, Justin Russell. We urge you, please get involved. Now is a time that, unlike any other in our history, you have to take personal responsibility. We urge you to visit firstcongress.org, get involved in your political process, get involved in the issues, become active in how you're governed. And if you have any thoughts or comments about the show today or some of the neat language that was brought out by several members of our roundtable, you can go to firstcongress.org and post on our blog, and we'll answer that.
Any suggestion for words you want us to use?
No, I think we've done a good job suggesting words today, Al.
And I would suggest to everyone, if you know, if your congressman or congresswoman is home, your senator is home, and they're holding an opportunity for you to come and hear him or her talk about this problem of the deficit and the problem it causes our country long term if it is not solved quickly, please go, pay attention, understand it's a very complicated issue, but it's something that is going to affect you and everyone you know and everyone in this country if we do not solve it quickly. And we need the citizens to be able to understand it so they can say to their members of Congress, solve this problem, settle it now.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear. Well said. One last item for business. We are getting word that we are going to have a pretty high-profile guest on the show here in the next few weeks, somebody of deep name recognition, at least inside the Beltway. This is going to be interesting, so we invite you to stay tuned. We'll have some further announcements down the road. Again, on behalf of Al Swift, Bob Hines, Dr. Ralph Winnie, I'm your moderator, Justin Russell. Thanks for listening to Backroom Politics Live from Shelley's Back Room. We'll be with you next Tuesday, 4 o'clock, here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a good week, everybody.
Happy applauding.